You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
You're listening to All the Kings Men, the official podcast of the LA Kings. Now, here's your host, Jesse Cohen.
When it comes to a starting lineup, everybody loves the starter from Jack Black. Loaded with the superior skincare that the pros love, LA Kings fans can get the starter for just $10, shipping included. Available exclusively at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB, the starter has four of Jack Black's best-selling skincare and shave products, plus a full-size intense therapy lip balm, SPF 25 in natural mint. Here's to the winning combination of the LA Kings and the starter from Jack Black. $10 plus free shipping, available at getjackblack.com with the code TEAMJB while supplies last. Welcome back, Kings fans. I am Jesse Cohen. This is All the Kings Men. Another offseason is mercifully over. We have Kings hockey to watch this weekend, and training camp starts next week. But before it does, I wanted to identify the 10 biggest questions and storylines at training camp. And I don't know about you, but I'm dying to see how it all plays out. It was a really eventful offseason. I fully expect the preseason to follow suit. So without further ado, welcome to the preseason, you guys. All right, we're here to ask the 10 biggest questions facing the LA Kings heading into training camp for the 2021-22 season. I'm going to stress this now. We'll bring it up time and time again, I'm sure, over the next 45 minutes to an hour. This is just a conversation about training camp. We're not worried about the season. So if you're listening to this and you're wondering, well, how many games is Cal Peterson going to play? That's a conversation for a later date.
We'll get there.
Yeah, about a month from now. Joining me today, Jack Jablonski. You just heard his voice. How you doing, Jack?
I'm great. Good for another season. Excited for hopefully a playoff-bound LA Kings team.
That's right. Jared Chaffron will be covering the Ontario Reign for us this season. Jared, how you doing?
I'm great. Great to be here.
Welcome back to All the Kings Men.
Thank you.
And, of course, Zach Dooley. How are you doing today, Zach?
Disappointed to be introduced last, but very happy to be on the podcast.
The most tenured.
Should I say, and featuring Zach Dooley?
Yeah, I'm like the guy, like the guest star in the episode where it's like also starring.
That's right. I should say that with Jack Jablonski introducing Jared Chaffron and featuring Zach
Dooley. Yeah, there we go.
All right, got it. All right, so we're going to start out with a real simple question, which is coming out of training camp, who's going to wear the letters? Obviously, I think Andre Kopitar is going to wear the C. I think Drew Doughty's probably a lock for the A. And in a simple world, Dustin Brown would be the other candidate to wear the A. He was wearing it at the end of last season. However, it is Dustin Brown's final season under his contract. And we have a ton of new faces, Arvidsson, Edler, and Deneau. Edler has worn a letter in the past. Deneau and Arvidsson have not. However, there are tons of guys, Matt Roy, Alex Iafallo. Zach, we talked a little bit about this last year, so I'll start out with you. Any players that leap to the top of your mind as candidates to wear that third letter?
Obviously, Brown makes the most sense. You know, once Jeff Carter was moved to Pittsburgh, Brown stepped in with the A.
Right.
Exudes leadership, you know, a natural choice. Alex Iafallo is a name who wore the A once Brown was out for the year last year, who will certainly be a part of the leadership team, was rewarded with a four-year deal, committed to the franchise long-term. He's a guy that the organization views as having some of those leadership and character qualities that are valued. So he's a guy that, you know, if say one of those guys is out of the lineup, I think he's an obvious choice to be a part of that leadership team.
Jared, I'll ask you from a broader view of it. Do you care who wears the letter on a team? Like, as a support staff member, does it impact how the guys interact with each other?
I think yes and no. I think that, you know, if you have the wrong guy wearing it, it can be a problem, which is why, like you said, you know, hey, you know what you have in a guy like Dustin Brown. He's been here forever. He's going to be a guy, whether he's wearing a letter or not, that young players are going to go to look up to ask questions, to say, hey, you know, what have we done in the past and how did we work this and where do I fit in here? So I think sometimes if you pick the wrong guy, then it's a problem. But luckily, and Zach just mentioned, I mean, Alex Iafallo is a guy who players are going to look up to because he's part of that next generation. So you can't really go wrong with a few of those choices. It could matter, but if you pick the right person, maybe it doesn't.
And Jack, as far as on ice goes, this is something that I don't think it gets discussed as much as it did when I was a kid. Maybe I'm wrong, but like, there's a reason for the letters beyond just ceremony. You know, when you hear someone like Todd McClellan talk, he says, you know, it's just a stitch of fabric. The fans care about it more than we do, blah, blah, blah. That's fine and dandy, but there are rules governing who can talk to the refs and where you can go on the ice based on letters. I mean, how important is it on the ice who's wearing the letters?
I mean, it's important to an extent. You know,
I think McClellan has a good point in terms of, you know, it means more to the fans and, you know, the aura and you know, that situation opposed to, you know, when you're on the ice. But yeah, there are rules. You know, the captain and the assistants are the ones that talk to the referees when there's calls to be made or discussions to be had about situations on the ice. But again, you know, you look at the Kings, you know, core, and you know, you lead to Brown, you lead to Iafallo. Edler's another option, but he's on a 1-year deal, so mm-hmm. that may be a little weird. But again, that leadership core you mentioned, not only the A that is quote unquote up for grabs, but seems to be, you know, I'd say likely towards the Dustin Brown path. But again, you know, they've got options, and they seem to have a solid core that's not only, you know, tenured, but also some of those secondary guys like, you know, the Iafallos and the Kempes that are, you know, starting to really garner some understanding of what leadership really means.
And in the past, we've seen them, and multiple teams do this now, two A's on the road, two different guys on, you know, at home. And
yeah.
So anyway, just wanted to get that one out of the gate. Next question, will any invitees get contracts? I'm going to skip over this from a conversational standpoint because it's pretty straightforward. We don't know. Maybe they will, maybe they won't.
We don't know. We've seen in the past where the Kings have brought in a guy or two with NHL games to kind of compete in camp. And in the last couple of years, we've seen like Emerson Edom, Lance Boma brought in for main camp and wound up on the Setoguchi, all of whom wound up on the Ontario roster at the end of the day. So, yeah, it's unknown at this point being before rookie camp and main camp, but there is precedent.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, just on top of that, to keep in mind is the Kings don't have many contracts to give out either.
Yeah.
You know, they're right up against the, you know, the 50 contracts and, you know, there's a few spots with people moving across seas. But again, it's one of those, you know, tight areas in the Kings organization where money's not a factor, but spots are.
Yeah. And this is a question where, maybe a guy like Sean Walker, right, who came to camp, whatever it was, 4 years ago, spent a year in Ontario before signing his ELC. I think that's the scenario that's more likely. Next question, which goalies are assigned to which team? I think it's pretty clear Jonathan Quick and Cal Peterson will begin the season in L.A. Garrett Sparks and Matthew Vallalta tabbed to spend at least the beginning of the season in Ontario. But then the question becomes Parikh, Ingham, and Lessamon. You know, do they go to the ECHL? Do they stay in Ontario? Jarrett, any idea, or have you heard anything about ECHL teams that might be options for Reign players if there's no room in Ontario?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I think that's one of those things where, you know, from the ECHL standpoint, you got to find holes. You got to see which teams end up with affiliations, which teams don't have affiliations, how many players for the teams that do have affiliations, how many players are they given from their affiliate. So I think that's something that's always kind of revolving at this point. I think, you know, there's an opportunity for those goalies at these camps to earn their way somewhere. And yeah, you're right. Right now, you know, it's going to be pretty tough for one of those three goalies to take out a Garrett Sparks or a Vallalta. But you know what? Garrett Sparks is someone who was in the ECHL last year. Now, that was primarily because of COVID COVID situation. But, you know, it's not to say that something can't happen at camp. But, you know, there's an opportunity if the Reign decide to keep three goalies, which some American League teams do, then there's a spot up for grabs potentially of a guy who could be in the American League next year.
Yeah, and again, no limit on AHL rosters. Lethemon played last season for the Swamp Rabbits. I'm assuming he will go return to them. But Ingham also spent time there last year. So
yeah, I think neither of them are on an ECHL contract with anybody. So their rights can be assigned basically wherever. And Greenville is affiliated with Florida. So if the Panthers or the Checkers, you know, or to that matter, the Kraken, who are now also in on that affiliation, send Greenville goalies, then, you know, there might not be room for some of these guys who you just mentioned.
Yeah. And just again, an opportunity for me to say that I hope that the new team in Savannah opens up an affiliation with the LA Kings because my father lives in Hilton Head, which is a 45-minute drive away from Savannah.
The new building is coming along.
He'll be your new ECHL insider.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. All right, so we're going to move away from some of the simple questions. We're going to start getting into actually, you know what? I'm going to skip out of order real quick. I'm going to get to another simple one, and that is Vladimir Kachev. Does he make the team out of camp? We don't know. Remains to be seen, but that's, to me, one of the larger questions. Comes over from the KHL to medium fanfare, I'd say, Zach.
I think that's fair. Probably maybe a little bit less so than Nikolai Prohorkin did. But Prohorkin also was a guy who was drafted so long ago that it was like the excitement of how many years in between seemed to build up the hype even more around him. And he's a guy who did not make the team out of camp, but was added after he kind of assimilated for a few weeks in the AHL, was here for a year. He's an interesting player, a guy who was over a point per game in the QMJHL way back when. So he knows North American hockey a little bit. And he's one of maybe the guy you know the least about of the several forwards on that bubble for a roster spot. So he's certainly a guy to watch and a guy that will be of some interest.
Yeah. So again, no answers to these questions. That's the point of this conversation. But
Exactly.
Wanted to throw that out there because I think those are the ones that require the least amount of conversation. That brings us to what does the left side of the defense look like? And this is really two separate questions. The reason I singled out, the left side is that I think it's a safe assumption that Drew Doughty, Matt Roy, and Sean Walker will comprise the right side of the Kings defense. So then the question becomes, Ole Mata and Alex Edler, from my perspective, would have to clear waivers and their contracts sort of prohibit them from beginning the season in Ontario. Not that the Kings would particularly want them to, but and not that it's impossible. It just seems unlikely to me. And so then the question becomes, Mikey Anderson and Tobias Bjornfoot, who spent the bulk of last season in the NHL as rookies, and I would say impressed in those roles. However, they can clear waivers. Guys like Christian Willanen and Cale Clegg cannot. So then the question becomes, who gets the minutes? Who is on the team coming out of training camp? Is it Anderson, Bjornfoot, Mata, and Edler? Is it, you know, does either Bjornfoot or Anderson get sent to Ontario just to start the season to give Clegg or Willanen a chance? Jack, we'll start with you. Do you have any particular hopes or players that you're excited about seeing come out of training camp on the left side of that defense?
Well, I think in terms of excitement, I think the growth from year one to year two is something that I'm looking at with both Mikey Anderson, but specifically Toby and Tobias Bjornfoot. You know, he played a solid chunk of games last year, but he still only has 33 games of experience in the NHL. And he was sheltered a little bit, but also in terms of kind of just put out there to just see what he could do last year. It was kind of just a project to be like, all right, let's get him experience this year. Obviously, it hasn't gone the way we necessarily want, but we also know that this experience can go a long way. And I think in, you know, terms of looking at the NHL or even the AHL, but when you're going from year one to year two, that growth is so important, not only, you know, on the ice, but understanding how to live this life, how to live this as a profession. And, you know, this is a work atmosphere. It's not just, you know, for the love of the game. And, you know, for Mikey Anderson and Toby, you know, I think we're going to see, you know, big steps, mainly because I think you've got two guys that really understand the game and really started to understand, you know, where they belong, but also how to play their type of game in the NHL. So, you know, I think you're going to see Edler, you know, in the NHL, no question. He's going to be on the team. There's a reason they signed him. The veteran leadership is going to be extremely valuable on the left side for Edler. Mata as well, but Edler with his experience and his, you know, what he's been able to do throughout the years and everything that goes along with that, I think that can help those two young guys. And I think that's what I'm looking most forward to. I think the big question is what do you do with a guy like Cale Clegg? Because he has to clear waivers. He's someone that we've seen. We know there's something there, but how much and is there enough to get him in the lineup every single night? So, you know, you've got a few different pieces, but I do see, you know, a guy like Mikey Anderson for sure being in the lineup. Toby Bjornfoot, important camp.
Jared, last year there weren't a lot of waivers claims across the league. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but with taxi squads and COVID and flat cap, et cetera, not a lot of teams looking to sort of poach players, although it did happen, particularly to
Troy Grosnick.
Yes, exactly. Troy Grosnick
made up the majority of the NHL's waiver
claims. That's right.
Two
thirds of the claims were one guy. but I'm curious, you know, how disruptive it can be to a minor league team to have a player that they were expecting all of a sudden get snatched out of nowhere.
Well, very disruptive. And I think that's why, you know, having some depth is important, but yet, right, if you have too many guys and you can't send them down, then you're at risk of losing somebody. I think that plays into, you know, when teams look at camp and who's going to make the roster to start the season, that plays into it. I mean, the conversation you guys were just having about, you know, maybe sending some guys down who might be better suited to be in the NHL? Do you risk losing somebody else? Because if you have a couple of injuries and all of a sudden, wow, it really would have been nice to have a guy like Kel Clegg or, you know, whoever you might have lost in something like that. And that becomes an issue. So I think that's something teams have to balance. I think it's definitely on their mind throughout training camp. And it definitely is one of those things. John Robleski is probably sitting there. He's very in tune with what's happening for that as well, because he's trying to plan out his combinations and start to look at what he's going to have. But yeah, you're always at risk if you have somebody like that. Now, if somebody has a really, really bad camp and you say, you know what, well, this guy, we got to send him down because everybody else is playing better. And well, then maybe another team knows how bad that camp has been and maybe they don't claim him. So it just kind of depends on, you know, if everybody's playing well and everybody's earned that, then it's a little tougher.
I'm glad you brought up depth, because I think this is one of those conversations. It's easy for fans to sort of lose the forest for the trees. Like, Yannetti loves to bring up Thomas Hickey as the one mistake that the Kings scouting staff made when drafting him, I think, fourth overall in 2007, something like that. Anyway, but from my perspective as a Kings fan, the mistake was never in drafting Thomas Hickey. The mistake was in, I mean, it wasn't even a mistake. It didn't matter, right? They won the cup twice in the subsequent years. So, you know, at some level, who cares about Thomas Hickey? But he was claimed off of waivers. And if you wanted to say what a mistake was, the mistake was not anticipating having an asset that might have been claimed. And who knows, maybe, you know, if they didn't ever make room for Alec Martinez, maybe they still would have won the cup with Hickey in his place. Who knows? It worked out fine from my perspective. The reason I bring it all up, Zach, though, is that I think it's easy sometimes for fans to fixate on one player and lose the sight of the fact that no player, Sidney Crosby, Alex Ovechkin, Connor McDavid, Wayne Gretzky, no one player charts the destiny of a franchise.
100%. And especially, I think people like to fixate on the sixth defenseman or the 12th forward in that right. way. You know, it's like, well, if so we just true. Got rid of the fourth line center, then that fixes our problems. Like, it doesn't. Like, right. That's the guy playing, you know, 8 to 10 minutes a night, an important role, but it's never about one guy. I'm going to bring up one point, because I think that you're right, Jesse. I think that the way that you spelled it out, those four guys are the four most likely to open mm-hmm. on the left side, but I'll make a point for Kel Clegg, and that's please. He can play both sides of the ice very well. He mm-hmm. played probably three quarters, if not more, of his time in the AHL on the right side as a left shot D. So he has that versatility. He's done it in the AHL and in the NHL where he can play both sides. And maybe if you're looking at your seventh D or your eighth D, having that versatility from the press box could be huge. You know, having a guy who could slot in on the left or the right in case of an injury could be big. So I think most likely it's those four on the left, but you know, Clegg does have that versatility in his arsenal as well to where he could fill in on both sides.
What I think is extremely interesting going into camp is that Clegg versus Mata battle, because Mata didn't have a great start to last season with the Kings. He quickly was demoted from the first line and at times wasn't even in the Kings lineup. This year, does he bounce back, or does someone like a Kale Clegg pass him up because of that versatility and the youth and maybe the potential upside and offense as well? So, you know, I think you look at that top six, if things don't drastically change or, you know, we don't have any giant surprises, you look at that left side, you know, with Anderson, Bjornfoot, and Edler. But that seventh spot, like Zach mentioned, is, you know, is Kale Clegg a guy who can really step up and surpass a guy like Olli Maatta?
And Zach sort of hinted at the solution to all of this without realizing it, which is the thing that we always forget about, which is there's 23 spots available on the roster. But those extra
or
three
did
spots,
I realize it?
Maybe you did.
It doesn't have to be 14,
exactly.
7.
You can carry 8 defensemen.
Correct.
Yeah. And obviously, I think the glut of Kings forwards, which we will get to in a second, I think the assumption is that they'll carry 2 forwards and 1 defenseman as healthy scratches, but they don't have to.
I guess you also have to just look at guys like, you know, Bjornfoot, Anderson. Mm-hmm. I mean, Anderson kind of became a staple. I don't know. I don't see them sending him down. But,
either.
You know, those kind of players in this situation in general, what you have to look at is, well, is it going to damage them if you do send them down? Mm-hmm. How much would that hurt their confidence level to be said, well, look, you know, just it's not the right time right now. Bide your time. You'll come back up. And you see teams that have done that because of this reason where they don't want to lose guys. And then those guys maybe take a hit. They go down. they shouldn't be in the American League. They're NHL players, and then it kind of hurts their confidence and it kind of damages their development. So that's a fragile thing you have to play with as well.
And the flip side is it can be used almost as a test, right? Like if you want to find out what kind of guy you've got, for example, I mean, there I'm not going to name names, but there are tons of players in Kings history that get sent down and then the stories come out of like, oh, he didn't take it so well versus, oh, he buckled down, took it seriously and came back stronger than ever. We're going to move on. I'm going to go out of order again, guys. Sorry about that. But I just want to start talking about the forwards. And this one, to me, seems simple, which means I'm probably wrong. but the question is, will Iafallo and Brown start the season on the first line? I'm going to go ahead and start out and give my opinion. I say yes. And the reason I say yes is the same reason I said that the Edmonton Oilers would miss the playoffs for a decade and the reason that I said that the Red Wings would make the playoffs for two decades, which is until I see otherwise,
yeah,
I'm just going to expect things to play out the way they have in the past. There will come a day when the top line for the Los Angeles Kings is not Alex Iafallo, Dustin Brown, and Ajay Kopitar, but until that day comes, I just expect that the opening night home opener, the names that get announced are those three guys. Jack, any thoughts or preferences?
I agree that I think that that's how it's going to start. Mm-hmm. I think we always know that, McClellan or any head coach in the NHL makes, mid-game adjustments and moves things around. When you look at the additions of Deneau, obviously he's a center, so that's nothing to worry about. But you look at what Kopitar, he's a pretty staple, pretty much a staple in the LA Kings. I should be able to pronounce his name properly. Yeah. Kopitar, he needs certain things, and certain centers like to be very particular with what they want. We've seen that with Sidney Crosby. It's never, giant names. It's certain types of players that work out well. Kopitar follows that trend, and for some reason, the Iafallo and Brown has worked. Now, are those names your top, first line type of players on a Stanley Cup contending team? I don't think anyone would say that right off the bat, but what we do know is that it works. And I think the Kings' depth now becomes a factor for Kopitar to really just focus on the offense. And I think, if that's, the line that shows up in the offensive draws day in and day out, opposed to having to be on the defensive side of things, I think it could, really turn the tide and, let that offensive side of Kopitar focus on just producing and maybe those stats are driven up with Brown and Iafallo on the side of him. So I think that's how it starts. Do I think that's how it finishes? No, I think you're going to see some adjustments. Maybe Arvidsson moves up and Brown moves down to the third line and, Kempe, and there's plenty of options. We know that because there's 35 forwards on the Kings Kings roster. I think that's what we're going to see to start the season.
I bumped into Darrell Evans standing outside watching some of the guys scrimmage.
Yep.
And I just said to him, so, what do you think? Does the Kopi line stay together? And he, in a perfect fashion, reminded me of the thing that always gets left out in these conversations, which is, well, the first thing you got to see is who's healthy.
Yeah.
Right? And so, somebody gets hurt in training camp, that's it. Different line. But all things considered, Zach, where are you on this one?
I mean, I'm inclined to agree. If you look at the three players individually, they played their best hockey together, and they were worse when not together. Mm-hmm. And the analytical, puck possession, chances created and allowed back that up, where that line was, analytically speaking, one of the best in the NHL. The production didn't necessarily match that, but the chances were, very good for and against with that line on the ice. However, because Jack went in, this is the line, I'll give a counterpoint, is that line was broken up towards the end of the year for production. Alex Iafallo was moved down and Adrian Kempe was moved up, both of whom found some success in their new role. So I do think that's the most likely line. I think that if you hear Dustin Brown talk about playing with Kopitar, it's clear that he understands what Kopitar needs to succeed in a way that I don't think anyone else does. And I think Alex Iafallo, in all honesty, could complement any two players no matter where he's put. So I think it's likely that they start there, at least start there this season. But, you've got a Victor Arvidsson, who's a few-time 30-goal scorer who could slot in on the right. You've got Kempe, you've got Athanasiu, you've got several guys who could slot in on the left. It's not a lock, but it's likely.
Yeah, and I'll just remind everybody, because I love it, you know, how many times last year did we hear Todd McClellan say of Alex Iafallo, this is a player that other players ask to play with?
Yeah.
And he played 90% of his even strength minutes with Anže Kopitar. And I, again, will leave it to the listener's imagination which players were asking to play with Alex Iafallo. So we're going to skip on down now, and this is where we start getting sort of complicated, and these questions start spilling out into each other and overlapping. So the question is, coming out of camp, and we sort of alluded to this with the left side of the defense question, the question is, how many centers will the Kings have? And this question is sort of a cheat, because obviously Anže Kopitar and Philippe Deneau will be two centers. So then the question becomes, does Gabriel Vilardi switch to the wing? Is there room for him to switch to the wing? Is Jared Anderson Dolan the fourth line center? Is Blake Lizotte the fourth line center? Are all three of them centers? If so, you know, what does that mean for some of the quote unquote kids?
12 centers.
Yeah. Everybody on this team plays center. Now, in 2011-12, it was a very similar situation. Dwight King, Jordan Nolan. Jeez, what am I doing? I'm sorry.
Jarrett Stolen.
Yeah, thank you.
Jared Anderson Dolan.
Brad Richardson and Trevor Lewis all were options at center, and of course not all of them played center. So, Jared, I'll just start with you. If you could make a team entirely out of centers, it's not the real question. But I'm just curious, based on your, you know, getting familiar with the roster and looking at what the Kings' options are, you know, should we expect five centers on the roster coming out of camp?
Yeah, I would say yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, look at Trevor Moore played center in the World Championships.
That's right.
He's not going to be, you know, you don't think of him as being one of those four guys. Right. But again, having the versatility, I mean, you know, he's going to be on the roster. You know, he's going to be in a penalty killing role. But a guy who could play up and down the lineup. And yeah, if you need to throw him in center, he could be there too.
That's right.
That was a pretty high level of competition. And from all indications, mm-hmm. it sounded like he played pretty well there. So, I mean, I think you're absolutely going to see that. There's a lot of guys in this team that can be shuffled in and out. And that's a good thing. I mean, it helps when you're trying to find combinations for guys to click, for guys to have success together. The more opportunities that you can try to, you know, fit guys into those roles, why not? I think that's definitely, you know, being able to play that, especially from a defensive role, it's going to help you try to make this team.
So the reason I sort of phrased it this way is because it's going to set up the last three questions. But I'm you know, an insane person, and so I try to listen to as many conversations about the LA Kings as are available to be heard. And one of the things that I keep hearing people talk about, whether it's on other podcasts or on message boards or on social media, is the notion of Gabriel Vilardi moving to wing. And the thing that I find myself screaming at my phone when I'm listening to it is, which wing precisely do we think that Gabriel Vilardi will switch to? Because we've already mentioned Alex Iafallo, Dustin Brown, Victor Arvidsson, Adrian Kempe, Trevor Moore, and Andreas Athanasiou. That's six wings that I don't expect to be playing fourth line minutes, whether because of their experience, their scoring ability, their contract, the place they are in their careers. Those guys are not, to Zach's point, playing 8 to 10 minutes a night. So Gabriel Vilardi's not moving to wing unless it's the fourth line. And I just don't think at this point in his career that you're maximizing his value playing him as a fourth line winger. So I don't anticipate Gabriel Vilardi moving to wing this season. Not to say that it couldn't happen, or not to say, to Jack's point, that it couldn't be experimented with mid-game, special teams, you know, as the season progresses. But coming out of camp, I expect him to be at center.
I don't agree.
Oh, okay.
I think that to start camp, mm-hmm. you're right. I think he starts in the middle. I think that, personally, the Kings won't have five centers at the end of camp. They'll have six.
Okay.
And Gabe Vilardi's included in that. Blake Lizotte, Jared Anderson Dolan, and Quentin Byfield is included in that. So I don't think it's five. I think it's six.
All right.
And it's seven if you count Trevor Moore, and it's eight if you count Elias Anderson, and it's nine if you count Andreas
Athanasiou. I forgot about Elias Anderson, of course.
Who played center for a little bit last year. So it's like the NHL video game where like 80% of the forwards are listed as center because they probably played there when they were 16 because they were the best player on their team.
Yeah.
And everyone's a center. But I'm going to say that five's low. I'd take the over.
Okay. Nice. All right. So that then brings us to two of the final three, and I split this one in half because the reality is, and this is why I'm bringing it up, there are simply too many guys currently under contract for the LA Kings. And when I say too many guys, I understand that the AHL has no roster limit, so theoretically you could send 15 guys down and they'd all, you know, maybe not all of them would clear waivers, but even if 10 of them cleared waivers. The problem is you have Turcotte, Kupari, Byfield, Kaliev, Madden. Thomas won't start the season, but Fagamo, I'm sure there are names I'm forgetting because his should be perfectly clear at this point. There are too many names to remember off the top of one's head. So the question then becomes, who will be put on waivers? And if any of them are put on waivers, will anybody be? It doesn't matter if they're put on waivers and sent down, because that's whatever. The question is, will anybody be claimed, like Thomas Hickey we mentioned earlier? There is no answer to that question, but I'll just couple the other question along with it right now, which is, will there be any trades? Because the way you avoid a waiver claim, which they did not do when it came to Thomas Hickey, and they probably should have, is you trade those pieces off. So if you have 10 guys that can play on the left side of the defense and 10 guys that can play center, and you don't want to lose them for nothing, the solution is to try and find a partner. I personally am anticipating trades. I won't say by the end of training camp. I'll say by November 1st, because, you know, camp will happen and things will get sorted. And, you know, every year, every team puts a bunch of guys on waivers. So I think that's probably the least likely time to worry about a claim, although Thomas Hickey, if memory serves, was claimed coming out of training camp. But Zach, do you anticipate, like I do, some trades of assets from the LA Kings between now and, again, we'll say November 1st, not the end of camp?
You can see it, right? Because of the where the Kings have depth, it's in areas, you know, that have guys who have played NHL games and who might be of interest somewhere else in exchange for a draft pick, right? Mm-hmm. In lieu of putting someone on waivers, maybe there's another team who likes a depth piece on the Kings who the Kings view as the 15th forward or the 8th D, and you can get a draft pick for that player. I could see it. I think, like you said, like, it's every team puts all these players on waivers, so you could look at it two ways. Is it the best time to put a guy on waivers because there are so many other names that might let him slide through, or is it the worst time because teams might have openings when they themselves put 10 guys on waivers? Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. Waivers to me is like this mythical thing that everyone thinks right. Every player is going to get claimed, and then 98% of them don't.
Yeah.
Because there are only so many roster spots, and you realize that other teams are putting guys on waivers because they have, you know, the full roster. So I always lean to say no, someone will not get claimed on waivers, but you could see the logic behind a potential trade of maybe an asset out.
And Jarrett, I'm going to go to you on this one because I remembered the name I left off of the Ontario Reign players list, which is TJ Tynan, who was the AHL MVP last year. And the reason I bring all this up is because, again, I hear these conversations. I hear people saying, well, you know, and I'm just going to throw out some names. I don't anticipate them being waived. I would not personally like them to be waived. But they say, like, well, put Lazat on and Wagner on waivers, send him Ontario so you can play, you know, Kupari and Byfield 8 minutes a night on the fourth line. And, you know, easy peasy, nice, you know, lemon squeezy, no problem. To which I always say, like, sure, but Austin Wagner is making over $1 million a year, and there's no discount if he's sent to the AHL. And I understand that the Reign don't have to pay that salary, but sending a guy making over $1 million to the AHL to not play top line minutes in the AHL is insanity, is it not?
Especially at that age. Right. You know, I think, right. You know, you've seen it happen where guys who are at the end of their careers have to do that. But I think when you have a younger team, you don't see that all the time. And I agree with Zach that, you know, you don't know when it's going to happen, but most likely the Kings are going to be able to move somebody for a pick down the line. Somebody's going to say, hey, we've got a fourth rounder or a fifth rounder to spare, and the LA Kings are going to say, you know what, we're going to use that, and we have too many players, and, you know, somebody who doesn't make this team, whether it's, like you said, right away during camp or maybe in the first month of the season, somebody's the odd man out, and you don't want to lose somebody for nothing. So I think that would make sense, but, I mean, you never know. I think it's just I don't envision any young players – who are making that much money, and when I say young, like under 30, to be playing for the Ontario Reign, because I don't know if that makes sense for the Reign's side of things either. I mean, they want to try to have those young players and develop them as well, and you have a guy that's kind of an odd man out in that scenario. I don't know if that helps the atmosphere of that locker room either.
Yeah, and the problem is, Jack, is that at this point there's like 7 odd men out. As we said, Iafallo, Kopitar, and this is should not be taken for line combos, just running off names. Iafallo, Kopitar, Arvidsson, Brown, Deneau, Kempe, Athanasiou, Vilardi, Trevor Moore. I think those guys are, please fill in a name if I've left one out. I think those guys are the closest thing to locks you have at forward making the Kings team.
Say Anderson Dolan. I don't know if you mentioned him.
I didn't yet because I wouldn't say it's necessarily a lock. That leaves Carl Grundstrom, Austin Wagner, Brendan Lemieux, Leish Anderson, Blake Lizotte, Jared Anderson, Dolan, Martin Furk, Vladimir Kachev. That's
Athanasiou.
I think I listed him as one of the guys that's close to a lock. If I didn't, I meant to.
Okay.
But that's a lot of names, right? Like,
yeah.
Leish Anderson, Blake Lizotte, Carl Grunstrom, Austin Wagner, Brendan Lemieux, Vladimir Kachev, Martin Furk, all fighting for three spots. Yeah. And whatever, however many extra forwards they want to carry, right? Maybe they carry eight defensemen, and this becomes even more complicated. So again, bringing this up is just because I keep seeing these conversations where people are like, oh, you know, wave them all and send them to Ontario. And it's like, well, okay, but Tynan's not playing less than, you know, 18, 20 minutes a night. Kaliev's going to play full minutes. Turcotte's going to play full minutes. Turcotte looks great to me. I love him, but he's not coming up to the NHL to play fourth line minutes.
Same thing with Matt. I mean, they want to get Tyler Madden a top six role too.
Kupari, whether or not Byfield.
Fagamo.
Yeah, like you're just not sending five guys to Ontario to then – and again, I brought up Martin Furk's name. Like Martin Furk, is he – you know, people are like, well, whatever, third line AHL. Well, he's making $700,000, whereas Alex Turcotte and Arthur Galliv are making $70,000. It's not the end of the world. It's not my money. But again, collectively, I think it's easy to ignore those kinds of decisions. But when you're casually talking about sending $3 to $4 million worth of salary to not play for your minor league team. Anyway, I think that sort of covers that.
Well, I mean, I want to bring up Brendan Lemieux for a second, though, because I think we kind of gloss over him. And like, I mean, he's a guy who at this stage of his career, he's not going to play in the AHL. I don't see that happening.
I don't think any of the guys,
but I think for him, he brings more of that toughness, physical element, which a lot of these guys don't. So you just traded for him for a reason. You wouldn't bring him in. You already knew this situation was headed this way when you bring in a guy like Brendan Lemieux and you make that trade. When you look at the rest of the roster, nobody else really brings that physical element that he does.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that's going to be slotted in when you expect a physical game. So, you know, he's someone that can be extremely impactful when you've got a gritty team or someone that, you know, a physical presence is needed on the ice in case, you know, people are taken advantage of or you just need that type of player. But then again, you have all these other guys that are, you know, people that can be slotted in certain situations. You know, you've got guys that are more gritty. You've got guys that have that speed element in faster paced games. So, you know, management and McClellan obviously have their work cut out. But, you know, again, you know, this is a podcast that leads into training camp. And these are the questions that need to be answered.
When it comes to building a franchise, I won't even say a roster, you have to start looking at things like value redundancy, right? So 2 years ago or a year ago, whatever it was when they acquired Martin Furk, it was at a time when they didn't have a ton of options for scoring wing, right?
And yeah, he played second line minutes for a while.
Yeah, and they were at a certain point in the progress of the franchise and the roster and everything. But now, right, a year later, however long it's been, 2 years, I don't know, COVID's screwed up my internal calendar, right, situations have changed. And now there are other, right now all of a sudden Victor Arvidsson's in the organization. And, you know, you have younger guys, you know, nipping at his heels. And, you know, Dustin Brown had a ton of goals last season that maybe you wouldn't have anticipated. And so, yeah, a guy like Lemieux is not redundant, right? Like he's, especially with the departure of Curtis McDermott, like he's the guy that does that thing.
Yep, he's your modern day enforcer.
Right. And so when it comes time to figure out which of those, you know, 52 guys are going to fight for those six roster spots. I think that'll go into it. So that brings us to our final question. And Zach already answered it earlier, but that's fine. A lot of these questions, like I said, have a ton of overlap. And that is simply, where will Quentin Byfield start the season in 2021-22? My hunch, I'm going to go opposite Zach. My hunch is that he starts in Ontario, just because if I'm Rob Blake, which I'm clearly not, although I'm going to the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you guys heard that or not. I'm not. I bought a ticket. If I'm Rob Blake and I have a 19-year-old center, second overall draft pick, who by pure fluke can go to the AHL and play top line minutes, top power play, top penalty kill, however much I want, no pressure, no media scrutiny, or I shouldn't say no media scrutiny, but in a smaller market of a smaller market within the hockey world, I take advantage of it. And if Quentin Byfield has an unbelievable camp and dominates, then I certainly am prepared to be wrong on this one. But my impulse, and anybody who's listened to this podcast in previous years will know my impulse. My impulse is always to be conservative and is to always silo the younger players together, keep them together as long as possible to help them build relationships, to figure out group dynamics, to learn how to play together, et cetera, blah, blah, blah. So my hunch is that he starts in Ontario. Zach, I know you said that he starts in LA. Do you want to expand on that or should we just move on?
Yeah, no, of course. Like if you asked before, you know, this AHL rule came into place, I would have said there's a 99% chance he's in the NHL.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Before, if it was NHL or Sudbury in the OHL,
yeah,
he was going to be with the Kings.
Sure.
The AHL presents an interesting solution, and it wouldn't surprise me if he started the year in the AHL with the future look that he's probably not there for too long.
Mm-hmm.
But I see, you know, my last impression of Quinton Byfield was Todd McClellan at a press conference saying that he's an NHL player today, and that he will be expected to be right in that hunt come camp in the fall. Since then, the AHL rule changed, and Philippe Deneau was added to the organization. But I still look at that. I look at what he did. I look at where he was drafted. I look at the personnel up front, and I say that the Kings are trying to make the playoffs this year. The Kings have expectations beyond what they were over the last 2 years. If he is the third best center, he's going to play 3C, and I think that he plays 3C.
Well, you know, right off of what you were saying there is you talk about 3C. Camp comes down to Velarde versus
I think that Gabe plays in the top nine as well on the line, personally.
Yeah. Well, and that's
my personal thing. I think that, like, you know, there I see your point. And it's I think that Gabe is the more likely to move to the wing than QB.
I completely agree. I'm, you know, in that center conversation of where does Byfield go? Is it going to be Ontario versus Los Angeles? Camp comes down to who's the better center at the time. And, you know, if Velarde has a great offseason.
I'm going to jump in and make one modification to what you just said, and then I want you to finish that thought.
Okay.
I don't even think it's about better. I think it's about who fits what they want to do.
I agree. So, that's a great point. And I think it is a matter of, you know, this team has slowly started to transition to more speed and skill. We know the NHL is moving in that direction and already has significantly with the teams that are winning the cup nowadays. But it's also come down to, you know, is Velarde someone who can, you know, impact the game in a different way than Byfield can? They play identical games, but I think, you know, you look at the skill set and the offensive side of Byfield presents a little bit more of an opportunity to start playing the way that the Kings have started drafting.
One of the funny things, you know, I get in the habit of doing it. I don't know if other people do. I'm assuming they do. We start talking about second line and third line as if they're clearly defined roles that matter. And the reality is, right, they're not. And the same with D pairs, right? You know, you look at Roy and Walker, and it's like, oh, well, Roy's the second pair, D, and Walker's the third pair. But if you look at difference in minutes, it's about a minute a game. Walker plays all the power play. Roy plays all the penalty kill. But at the end of the night, you know, if you're any given game, one guy can play more than the other. And I can't remember, Zach, how many times there were last season and the year before that where the second and third line, you know, would be identified as, oh, well, the second line tonight is Athanasiou, Lazat, and Carter, but the third line played two more minutes than they
did. I remember last year there was a point where it was Gabe, and I think it was Lazat, or it was Carter Kempe. They had never played on the same even strength line, but their TOI at even strength was like 5 seconds apart.
Right.
Which proves exactly what you just said, last year it was a middle six.
Yeah,
it wasn't second, third, it was a first line and then a middle six.
Yeah, I mean, it's all matchups, and then at the same time, who's playing better, and you reward them a little bit more. But, you know, you're right, it's really the Kopitar line, then you get your middle six, and then that fourth line depending on the matchups and you know who they feel presents an opportunity.
And I think this year, more than any in recent history, we'll see more of a quote-unquote top nine, truly, because we now have Deneau. And, you know, you heard Luke Robitaille talking about this on the thing I posted to the LA Kings Insider Audio podcast channel, which if you're not subscribed to, you all should subscribe to it right now. But he was talking about the strength, you know, the one of the reasons you get a guy like Deneau is in the past, if you have a, you know, there's an icing or a huge defensive zone face-off, you're throwing Andre Kopitar out there, right? Well, now you don't have to. And so if that reduces Kopitar's minutes by two, and it increases, you know, your quote-unquote second-line center, by 90 seconds, and then that bumps up your quote-unquote third-line center by, you know, 30 to 45, all of a sudden I think you might see a much more even distribution of minutes. You know, Zach, to your point last season, I think there were nights where the second, third, and fourth line might have even played the exact same amount of even strength. You know, it was like Kopitar and those guys played 18 to 20 minutes, and then every other line played, you know, whatever the remaining minutes divided by three is. So this year, I think we could see a ton of that. Jared, any thoughts on Quentin Byfield going down and playing for the Reign?
I think, you know, everything is about what we see at training camp. And I know that, you know, Zach mentioned, you know, the opportunity that he had last year to play in the NHL, to show that he can play in the NHL. Obviously, that we already know that. But now for him to prove, yep, I'm better than everybody else. I mean, I think he's going to get every opportunity to be there. And I think it's really about a 50-50 toss-up. I could see it going either way. I'm not really sure if I'm willing to make a prediction on it, but I could see it going either way.
I'll expand to, like, the point you bring up that is one of my biggest bugaboos is, like, these jobs are meant to be won and lost in training camp. There is a point to having training camp. So I'm not saying I think he's penned in. I think he will win the job in camp.
Well, even Dooley, like, you know, he played six games in the NHL last year, and, you know, you covered them extremely closely. You travel with the team. You know, he developed and really grew from game one to game six.
100%.
Yeah. Ultimately, I think Jack hit the nail straight on the head, which is the biggest story, the whole point of, not the point of this training camp, but I think from a fan perspective, the biggest, juiciest storyline is who winds up playing that 3C role.
I think it'll be very telling on the direction that they go, you know, come game one of the NHL. Because I think that could be very definitive, like Dooley says, is all of a sudden Byfield has 3C. You're not going to just back away from that. He's stuck in that position if you feel comfortable. And then that means all of a sudden Vilardi, you know, you need to find a new place, you know, in this roster to be valuable. Does it open up his career? Who knows? We'll find out. But at the same time, yeah, I think 3C is probably the juiciest thing because we've got most everything else slotted in except for, you know, where do the other seven forwards land? Beyond that, I think the big one that'll be most interesting to see is definitely going to be that 3C role.
The nice thing from a fan perspective is we're beginning to see now the benefits of having depth in your prospect pool because
such a great thing.
In previous seasons, guys that were drafted in deeper rounds would get hype and get attention that, you know, maybe was too much for them.
I don't mean
too much for them personally, but I just mean, like, you know, people get worked up and worried about second round, third round draft picks because you don't have a guy taken second overall or fifth overall, what have you. So one final thought before we wrap this up, because I've heard and I know my impulse in the past has always been, oh, well, what's the point of trading a guy for a fourth-round pick? Who cares? Fourth-round pick, whatever. But we saw in this past draft the value of having, again, not only depth within your player pool, but also within your pick pool. Because once you have all those guys, now all of a sudden you can absolutely use those third-round, fourth-round, fifth-round, sixth-round, seventh-round picks.
Move up,
get the guys you want. And even though the Kings took four guys at this most recent draft,
I think everyone at this table is extremely ecstatic with the strategy that Unetti and Blake used.
Yeah, exactly. And they were too, more
yes, great point.
So, anyway, that is going to wrap it up. Training camp kicks off at the end of next week. But between now and then, Jared, and Zach, you guys are both going to be out in Arizona watching the rookie rookie face-off in Arizona. We will talk to you both about that when you return. So good luck, safe travels. And me and Jack are just going to sit around watching Netflix.
We'll watch the live stream.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you soon.